across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's 6:06 on this Tuesday morning, September 10th, 2024. We are exactly 8 weeks away from Election Day, 56 days to go, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, on demand by podcast, watching us on social media video feeds. We're just glad to have you here starting your day right on this Tuesday morning. I got a question for you. If a couple of folks on the radio talk about BS throughout the course of the next 2 hours, literally BS, can they avoid getting in trouble with the FCC and restrict their language to words like manure? Instead, we're going to find out, because one of our topics is quite literally Manure 101. We speak every couple of weeks or so with Lincoln County dairy farmer Hans Brighton Moser, and a lot of times it's about issues of the rural economy, rural politics, things that are important to rural communities. We've had a lot to say about that lately. Investments in rural Wisconsin of all sorts, energy, infrastructure, healthcare, you name it. But if we get back to, you know, what's actually happening on the farm, and as a city kid who married into a dairy farm family, I know that there are times when people will pass by a, you know, an agricultural region and they'll go, ew, you know, it's cow poop. And others will go, that's the smell of money. And there is definitely a line there, a line where something that is a valuable nutrient for the soil becomes a hazard for the ground and the water. And it's important to know that distinction, especially in this age of larger and larger corporate farms. So we're going to talk to Hans Brighton Moser quite clearly about BS coming up a little later on in our second hour. In our first hour, Eric Hovde is a California banker with a foreign deposit problem that he dismisses with a hearty, so what? Quite literally. We're going to play the audio in just a few minutes here and explain why it matters if Wisconsin might have a U.S. senator, some would say another U.S. senator, using his position for personal financial gain. We'll also have Sherita Booker here in a few minutes to review some of the more popular Up North News social media posts of the past week, and Chad Holmes will preview his show coming up on Bull Falls Radio right after this fine program across the Civic Media Radio Network. Along the way, if you'd like to reach us with questions or comments, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. If you don't feel like calling this early in the morning, you can send us a text message instead with a comment or a question, and we may throw it up on screen here as well. Or you can do so if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, put something in the comment section. We can put it up there. And of course, always feel free to use the Civic Media app to call us or text us, or to listen to all of the many stations across the growing Civic Media Radio Network. And you can email us radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Across Civic Media stations tonight will be the presidential debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. Special coverage begins at 7:30 with the debate itself starting at 8 o'clock. You'll get analysis and commentary from the Civic Media news and political teams, anchored by Terry Bell for the former, Todd Alba for the latter. And so you can listen across Civic Media radio stations and again through the Civic Media app. So it's going to be a very busy day. We're also going to remember the actor James Earl Jones, who passed away yesterday at the age of 93. But first, it's time to say hello to my friend and down there in Waukesha, he's been nicknamed already, Greg Bach. We call him Killer because he had a rough commute into work this morning there. Oh, Mr. Man. Bach, good morning. You enemy of nature. What happened?
So let me just give a preface. When you're driving in this early, it's dark. I get up very early, and I wasn't falling asleep behind the wheel, but I was just tired. I was just like, you know, okay, just, you know, take my regular drive. I come in through the backcountry roads through Waukesha, And all of a sudden, on the corner of my eye, I just see this black splotch. I don't know what it was, but as I was just telling my production friends here up in Green Bay and Madison, it didn't feel like a squirrel. It was something no. bigger. Uh-huh. So I'm
like a wombat, well, like maybe an armadillo,
an opossum, or a a raccoon,
a dingo.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, a Danny DeVito character from the 80s. I don't know. but yeah, I just.
But how are you in the vehicle? Because, I mean, look, car crashes with nature. They happen. But how are you in your vehicle?
Well, the vehicle is fine. There was a little, like, some things need to be put back into their rightful places. And I
Okay. So a little Gorilla Glue can take care of that.
Everything snapped back where it needed to be. But I just don't feel good. And I know it happens. And I know it's not my control. And I understand all those things. But still not something that I ever want to do. I want to be as... Look, roads, cars, and humans in general are a general threat to nature. So I just don't want to push the threat forward. So,
I understand. I recall working in Rice Lake at WBKV. That was the first time I'd ever struck something. And it was, you know, it was a rabbit trying to dart across the road. And it's just this sickening feeling, you know, because you can't, it just can't be helped.
Yeah.
However, I ask about you and the car because I also know that having hit a deer myself and having been in multiple vehicles that have hit a deer, know just how much damage they can do, and people have actually died in car deer crashes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be something that big. One of my daughters was driving back middle of the night from visiting one of the other siblings, so it was a cross-country drive, and in the middle of the night, in the middle of North Dakota, hit a raccoon. And, you know, again, sometimes you strike it, you move on. But boy, this raccoon didn't go down without a fight. It tore up, I mean, basically tore out the radiator, you know, from the impact. And so there you are on the side of the road in North Dakota, pitch black, middle of the night, you know, nearest town at least a dozen miles away. And you're dead in the road with no radiator.
Ugh.
And, you know, eventually, imagine if they didn't have a cell phone signal, then you'd be waiting for somebody to come driving by. But eventually they were able to get a tow truck. And that's just from one stinking raccoon.
Yep.
So I'm glad that you're there and that you're safe, because these things do happen.
Yeah, they do. And everything seems to be driving fine. No problem with the tires. No problem with the car. Everything's running fine. So, yeah, just a few things on the front end that needed to be snapped back into place. So that's good. All good there, and I'm safe, which is good. But yeah, you're just like,
it's no fun. I know.
Please, animals, siblings, don't come to find me. I didn't mean it.
Right, exactly. No, I don't think the animal revolution is coming for you just yet. They've got bigger fish to fry, probably out there. Quite literally, they're upset about the people who fry fish. James Earl Jones passing away at 93. I don't have any big obituary in front of me here. I mean, it's just somebody whose name you say, and you already know the body of work, you know, whether it's Star Wars or Field of Dreams or the iconic roles, the many, many Broadway plays. But I also, you know, this is CNN, all of it. But I loved... as somebody who is like a huge fan of The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
I so loved the episode where he portrayed a very eccentric version of himself as one of the characters was kind of, you know, fan stalking him.
Yeah.
And he just leans right into it and embraces this character and is just goofy.
Yeah.
And I love an actor who has that level of self-awareness. And James Earl Jones has had that for a long time.
He seems to be bothered by, I think it's Sheldon.
Yes.
And and he goes, he's like, you guys want my autograph? You guys want to talk about Star Wars? Well, you know what? I love Star Wars too. I'm like,
Which no actor's ever going to say, sit down, let me talk to you more. Here, come to a sauna with me. We'll talk some more.
I think he says something like, I got a CNN residual check burning a hole in my pocket.
That's right. You know, and you've got the Lion King and
he was I was just watching Will and Grace too. He did the same thing, himself, playing a heightened version, takes an acting class from an idiot and... He's just great. He was wonderful.
And again, you never, ever really know with celebrities, but there's just something when you just, you get that sense, he actually is a nice guy,
yeah.
You know, that he's not, he doesn't have these diva moments. Doesn't mean you don't have bad days.
Yeah.
But if, you know, on balance, you're a good person. He's definitely what I think that's why many people reacted. It's not just the voice. It's not just the characters, but it's the person as well. And so anyway, we are just happy to note a good person having a good run,
yeah.
You know, at 93. That works out.
And if you want to see a very young James Earl Jones, watch the 1964 comedy Dr. Strangelove. I think it's his first film.
Really?
He plays a pilot.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We have the Up North News daily newsletter that I wanted to tell folks about as well. You can sign up for that at upnorthnewswi.com. And in the newsletter today, there is a story about corn mazes. There is including one very large corn maze directly across the border from Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. 10 miles of trails carved into a 28-acre cornfield. It's actually made up of four smaller mazes. Each has its own dedicated path in and out, so you don't have to worry about being trapped in there for several days. But, I mean, this thing is a monster. There's a photo of it in today's newsletter. It is also important, though, for us to note that this is Suicide Prevention Day. And it's never an easy thing to talk about, but it is oh so necessary. Every year, more than 900 people in Wisconsin die by suicide. And that word is intentional. There's an article in today's newsletter about, you know, the difference between saying that somebody died by suicide versus, you know, committing suicide and getting rid of the stigma, because suicide is so often the consequence of some unaddressed underlying illness like depression, trauma, some other mental health condition. And so just keep in mind, if you or someone needs help, if you need to talk, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 at 988. Again, 988. Please keep that in mind. All right, let's take a pause here, and then Sherita Booker will join us right out of the break with some of the top social media posts of the week, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Tuesday morning. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. All right, you know the drill by now. Sherita Booker, our social media manager, joins us on many Tuesdays to look back at the week and tell us about some of the more popular social media posts on the Face page and the InstaFace and the Tweet Machine and all of that. Sherita Booker, hello. How are you?
Hey, Pat. Good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Ever thankful for all you do to get all of the work from our Wisconsin-based reporters, our national reporters, our freelancers, and then other cool stuff you see on the interwebs. Get that all there so that folks kind of have one-stop shopping for all kinds of interesting Wisconsin stories. And in these posts, where we take three very popular ones from the previous week, sometimes they're newsy, sometimes they're featurey. A lot of times they revolve around food. People like food. And this first one we're going to talk about is all about how a Madison high school is removing the stigma around snacking. Can you tell us more about that and the post and the reaction to it?
So Madison East High School is helping battle food insecurity with a free snack spot where students can grab a snack in between periods. And they're also allowed to take that food home. So some teachers have said that they believe it's boosting attendance and helping students focus. That program is also funded and stocked through a partnership with Second Harvest Food Bank. That post had almost 3,000 likes on Facebook, and a couple of commenters left some really good feedback. Gretchen said, "I had food insecurity at home and went to Lafayette High School 06 through 2010. This matters, and it's a huge deal." Andrea said, "This is the way it should be. I remember eating breakfast at 6 o'clock a.m. in high school, and my lunch wasn't until noon. I used to try to sneak snacks during my morning classes, but I would get in trouble. Same in my high school. Like, we were not allowed to snack during the day. If you had food, it was like, put it away immediately.
Yeah, well, yeah. And look, I too grew up in a time where it was, oh, you're three square meals and, you know, no snacking. And you assumed that everybody got that. And it took too long for us to realize that there were indeed families with, you know, food insecurity. They didn't know if they were going to have much of anything for that next meal. And so to take away some of that stigma, you make food more readily available. Of course, I've certainly spoken at length about how school lunches and breakfasts just need to be free anyway. You know, we don't charge kids for the school bus ride in. It's just, you know, the cost of doing business. So this is a good thing, again, so long as it doesn't get, you know, in the way of education. You know, John Belushi, yelling food fight. But that was another time and another place. So good to see good reaction to that one. All right, football season is underway. And if you're going to talk about Packers legends and people who are remembered fondly, your list just can't skip Clay Matthews. And so now he is forever a Packer. Tell us about that post.
Yep. So former Packer linebacker Clay Matthews was inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. And Matthews spent his first 10 seasons with the Packers and was named first team All-Pro in 2010 and second team All-Pro in 2012 and helped the Packers win Super Bowl 45. And during those 10 seasons in Green Bay, Matthews also racked up 83.5 sacks and 15 forced fumbles. That post had more than 1,000 likes. And Bruce said, so many players and memories from that era. Woodson, Driver, A.J. Hawk, White, and the list goes on. Well earned, Clay. And Madeline said, I still remember when his photo was on the Wheaties box.
Well, and again, he had the quality of not just being personable, but being very, very good on the field. And other people have only the very, very good on the field and are not personable at all. And, you know, Clay has always been the whole deal. You know, a first team all pro, six-time Pro Bowler, a Butkus Award winner, the Packers all-time sack leader. He's got a Super Bowl ring. So, you know, no wonder that he's there. And it's always nice to, you know, think back on the teams that he served on not that many years ago. All right, our final one we had put up for Labor Day weekend. It's an oldie but a goodie. I mean, we've been at this for very nearly 5 years now. And to this day, of course, people are like, Up North News. Does that mean you're just doing news from up north? Nope, nope, nope. We're a Wisconsin-based news outlet. We are America's Up North. All of Wisconsin is up north when you look at this country. But still, people have their own definitions of up north. So we put up a little post once again asking people their feelings on the subject, Sharita.
Yep. So we love to run this back every now and then. You guys always have something to say about it. And the debate always gets people going, and we still have not yet come to a general consensus. So for Jim, he said, I used to say Highway 8, but in Wisconsin, up north is more of a feeling and an attitude. It's about being relaxed and having a good time. So no matter where you are this weekend, be up north and enjoy yourself. And Abby said, up north is not a place. It's a state of mind. But also, we got plenty of the answers, like Highway 8 and all that.
Oh, yeah. And you know, again, all of them work because, you know, as one of the commenters said, you know, Chicago thinks that Lake Geneva is up north, and it is. You know, if you're in Wisconsin, let me put it this way. If you're not in Wisconsin and you get to spend some time off in Wisconsin, you feel up north, whatever part of the state that you're in. But then, you know, a guy like me who lives just north of Highway 29, there is something about getting north of Highway 8, you know, that feels better. And frankly, it's almost like a blood pressure reading. As you go up, your blood pressure comes down. That by the time you get to Highway 2 and you're looking out on Lake Superior, I mean, you are as calm can be. That is just the magic of this state, Sharita.
Absolutely. And I would say a lot of people in Milwaukee, my friends and family, they would say going anywhere from Wisconsin Dells to Green Bay and further is up north. For us.
Well, yeah, because basically, if you're getting 2 to 3 hours out of your community and you're not, you know, heading straight east, west or south, you know, if you're getting 2 to 3 hours away, that's just a great sense of relaxation that you get if you've got a place that you want to go. And so that's why for some folks, you know, it's Door County. For others, it might be Sheboygan, you know, just being on the shore there, or taking the Mississippi, the Great River Road, you know, over by La Crosse and all the way down to Prairie du Chien. That still has, you know, an up north vibe of relaxation. It's just it's a catch-all, much like Up North News itself is a catch-all for good Wisconsin stories in the news, features, food, you name it. And Sherita Booker has all that for us every week. Hey, Sherita, thanks a lot. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again soon.
You too, Pat.
All right, Tony wants to pick a fight about this, putting up on YouTube. If people don't have a cabin where you live, it's not up north. But, I mean, don't people have cabins like in the Lake Geneva area and other places like that? So, I mean, and really, what is a cabin? You know, a cabin could be, a downtown condo, if that's your escape. A cabin is any place where you go, why am I making payments on a second place? Why am I having two places to clean? Why do I have two places to worry about? So forget defining up north. Now we're defining what's a cabin.
Well, I mean, if you don't have a cabin, that sentence is going to stick in my brain for a while.
Yep, you've planted something there. Brewers were off yesterday. They have they're in San Francisco for three games against the Giants. 8:45 is the first pitch tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday. Then again at 8:40 in Arizona on Friday. So we've got actually five night games out west for the Brewers. So late night baseball for folks who are Brewers fans. And potentially some good news. Packers coach Matt LaFleur says the team does not plan to put Jordan Love on injured reserve, an indication the quarterback could return relatively soon. So fingers crossed on that one. When we come back, U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde talks about his the foreign deposits at his bank and dismisses any concern about them. Details next. You're up north.
To lead a better life, I need my love.
We will tell you in today's history lesson in about 15 minutes why we've played a couple of Beatles songs as our bumper music so far this morning. On this Tuesday morning, September 10th, nice to have you along for Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow up here in Chippewa Falls. Greg Bach is in Waukesha. And we spoke a couple of minutes ago with Sherita about school lunches. And as I've mentioned a few times here, John Oliver's HBO show Last Week Tonight airs on Sunday nights late past my bedtime. So we tend to watch it on Monday evenings, and we did again last night. And the show was primarily about school lunches and just what a daunting task it is for any given school, especially, you know, some of those larger schools where they quite literally become the busiest restaurant in town for a couple of hours each day, trying to feed that many students and on a rather limited budget, especially when you have people in certain political circles who would be perfectly happy not feeding kids and saying that that is fully a parental responsibility. And if the parents are, you know, too poor or engaged in substance abuse or other things, well, then that's just too bad for the kid. And, you know, that's how apparently you're going to shame the parent somehow by depriving the kid of school lunches. Never mind that that completely qualifies you for the definition of a ghoul. It's just not good for the learning environment. And so I recommend highly taking a look at the John Oliver piece, either on your DVR or on YouTube. I'm pretty sure he puts the episodes there as well, because this is one program that is going to constantly remind you, we don't have a fare box. When kids get on the school bus, why are we charging for lunch? It's part of the learning day, and it improves on the learning environment. Senate candidate Eric Hovde is back in the news because he has finally commented on reports that his bank, SunWest, out on the West Coast, has a certain amount of foreign deposits in there that have gone undisclosed, and that that has the potential to create some kind of a conflict of interest in that, you know, again, your constituents, I would also argue your voters before you even have constituents, deserve to know that. Well, Eric Hovde has finally responded on a podcast hosted by Lisa Booth. And so here's, I think, 40 seconds or so of Eric Hovde basically dismissing any concerns and at least acknowledging now that he does have foreign deposits in his bank.
Yesterday, a newspaper mentioned what I just talked about, but then talks about, yeah, but Eric Hovde has financial issues because there's a foreign government that invested in his bank or has a deposit in his bank. Well, first of all, who cares if I have a deposit in a bank I own? They're not an investor in my company. And who cares if a foreign government has a deposit in my bank? It's like $200,000. My bank's over, you know, $3.5 billion. So it's insane how they try to compare, and what they're doing is they're trying to cause confusion in somebody's mind. So this is the nonsense that you have to deal with when you're running for the U.S. Senate.
And who cares? Who cares? That's his answer. Who cares? And goes on to brag about the size of his bank versus the size of the deposits. And look, his call reports for his bank have been examined since March of 2017. And there have been deposits of more than $118 million from undisclosed foreign banks, which began only after Eric Hovde assumed the role of CEO of that bank. And his response is, who cares? He says the depositors aren't as important as the investors, which really tells you a lot of what you need to know about, you know, the big money interests in this country today, that you as a depositor apparently don't matter as much as an investor does. You know, it's depositors that can cause runs on banks. Depositors are the very foundation of a bank, unless you're, you know, an investment bank or an investment broker. If you're a bank, your foundation is supposed to be your depositors, but clearly Eric Hovde couldn't care less about his depositors. And it just underscores the point that we really, really need the really wealthy to stop thinking they're so much smarter than regular folks, and that they can tell them anything they want, whether it's true or not, that foreign government deposits in your bank have no influence. The health of a bank's deposits means something to bank leadership. It has value. It can be leveraged, especially in this era of light-touch regulation that helped cause the Great Recession of 2008. And now, look, all of this would be a moot point if Eric Hovde were to win in November, because then he would no longer be CEO of the bank, he has said so, and because he'd no longer be invested in a bank whose deposits include foreign governments, right? Right? Well, actually, a Hovde campaign spokesperson told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel back in June that when they were asked, would Hovde divest from a bank with foreign deposits or set up a blind trust as Senator Tammy Baldwin has done? And the campaign spokesperson's answer was, Hovde will, quote, analyze the options available. Well, that doesn't sound at all like a certain corrupt ex-president who turned the Trump business into an ATM for foreign money and foreign influence and so many conflicts of interest that people have stopped counting them, does it? Is this really what Wisconsin wants in a U.S. senator? Someone potentially using their office for personal financial gain? I mean, again, we already have that in Ron Johnson pushing very specific tax breaks that greatly benefited him and a couple of his billionaire donors, who then turned around and put millions of dollars into helping him win his last election. We've only got one good senator in the state. Why would we want another rich, white, middle-aged, walking, talking conflict of interest with no interest in doing work for middle-class Wisconsin? or doing work for nursing home residents since he thinks they're about to die anyway, or working on behalf of farmers since he thinks they just ride around on tractors, or young adults who he considers lazy. They shouldn't have health insurance from their parents and they should be forced to work until age 72. This campaign has never been about Eric Hovde wanting to work for Wisconsin voters. It has always appeared to be about Eric Hovde's financial interests, not yours. His dismissal of these foreign deposits and his disdain about disclosing them only reaffirms it. This has been one big ego project for Eric Hovde and continues to be when somebody can so easily just wave a hand and say, who cares about this kind of influence? Why does this all matter to you? Because lucky you, Mr. and Ms. Wisconsin voter, you live in a swing state. We are the battleground of battlegrounds. And I always say every vote matters. And frankly, every voter matters in this state. And that's why it is so important, if you haven't already, to go over to myvote.wi.gov and just poke around on the website. You put in your name and your date of birth, and it'll your address, rather, and it'll tell you who's on the ballot in your area. Obviously, the big ones, president, senate, but who's running for legislature? All the maps have changed. So who you're voting for state assembly and state senate, that may have changed. Check your registration status. Maybe you sat out 2020. You know, maybe you just didn't want to go in and vote for either Biden or Trump. You're going to want to make sure that you're still properly registered. You're still at the right address. Or if you want to register, if you're finally motivated enough to vote, maybe this is the first time you're eligible to vote. Maybe you turned 18, you know, 2-3 years ago. Go there and learn how to get registered. But then to me, the site's greatest value is in absentee ballots. And I've said before, I'm somebody who, as much as I like voting in person, I know that sometimes between the weather and work and other circumstances, I've been busy on election days. And so now I sign up in advance. I have my absentee ballot mailed to me. I fill it out and I either return it by mail or by Dropbox, which you can use again, or even return it on election day. So head over to myvote.wi.gov. It's important because in this presidential swing state, I mean, we now have, Greg, what I think could be called, is it wall-to-wall Walzes? And I'm not sure if Walzes would be Z apostrophe S or Z apostrophe, but there's going to be two Walzes. Gwen Walz will be in La Crosse tonight for a debate watch party. And Tim Walz has announced that he will be campaigning in Wausau. So you've got wall-to-wall Wazes in Wausau and watch parties.
Pat, I looked it up and getting my notes here. It's pronounced Walzeses.
Walzeses, sorry. The Walzeses, wall-to-wall Walzeses will be here starting tonight. More than 200 debate watch parties have been organized by the Harris Walz campaign around the state. Attorney General Josh Call will be hosting one. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski will be hosting one. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. There will be Jody Emerson, the state rep up here in Eau Claire, will be hosting a debate watch party. More than 200 of them watching tonight. And then, from at least the standpoint of the Harris Walz ticket, they have promised that one of them or one of their top surrogates will be in every media market in every battleground state throughout the course of this week, which is why Gwen Walz is in the La Crosse area tonight to be in the La Crosse-Eau Claire market. That is a dedication to Wisconsin voters.
Yeah.
That, I tell you, a couple of years back, you might have thought, oh, we never get, you know, presidential campaigns here. That's really changed lately.
No, and it'll be funny on November 6th, be like, hey, you guys still here? Where'd you guys go? Oh, someone left a hat.
Will we miss? We won't miss the election being over, but I think the attention has been rather nice. Kamala Harris, for her part, will be in North Carolina and Pennsylvania this week. They have a very simple and fairly family-focused message this week. And I would sum it up as do something. Do something about corporate price gouging, especially on food. Do something about capping runaway costs on prescription drugs. Do something about the shortage of affordable housing. And contrast that with Donald Trump's record and Donald Trump's message, which is that he didn't really do anything as president. I love in the commercials how he talks about how great things were when he was president pre-pandemic. No, he was handed the Barack Obama economy that he had saved from George W. Bush's Great Recession and promptly squandered it and then really screwed it up, you know, with his response to the pandemic. And Trump is promising nothing but more chaos and coddling. And yet, you and I both know, Greg, where the standard is. I mean, Harris has got to get every fact right. Yep. She's got to be substantive but not boring. She's got to be personable but not cackling. And
she's got to be energetic and enthusiastic but not angry.
Right. And as somebody else wrote on social media, the only standard for Trump is he literally cannot fling poo. Anything else that he does will just be another day in the Donald Trump. Yeah.
Quick question for you, Pat. Do you know, will there be an audience? Are they cutting the mics?
I don't believe there is an audience, and they are cutting the mic.
Okay. Yes. All right. Oh, boy. That'll be interesting.
And of course, you know, what I'll be talking about most of all will be the moderators. And, you know, how they do this time around, which are David Muir and Lindsay Davis, who are, you know, journalists with a good reputation at ABC News. But we saw how the good journalists, you know, Jake Tapper and Dana Bash at CNN, so poorly handled the first debate when it came to fact-checking or stopping Trump from spewing one lie after the other. So that's what we'll be watching tonight. Special coverage here across the Civic Media Radio Network. And, of course, we'll pick it up with clips and reaction during this 6 a.m. hour tomorrow. We will have today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. You're up north. Each one believing that love never does. Yeah, welcome back to Up North News Radio, where we're rocking with... Yeah, Greg's looking at me like, please don't do that. I'm sorry. Today's theme is some iconic opening notes in today's history lesson, like that one, Sweet Child of Mine, from Guns N' Roses. On this day in 1988, that song hit number one as they were touring as the opening act for Aerosmith. Oh, did I mention Aerosmith? We should mention that lead guitarist Joe Perry is 74 years old today. And obviously with relations with Steven Tyler and the rest of the band sometimes strained, he has done things occasionally on his own. Here was a nice little clip. I had not heard this one before. This is Joe Perry doing a very nice bluesy hit here called Stop Messing Around. All right, back to iconic intros. So again, we let things run a little bit more than normal. And I would not consider myself a Nirvana fan by any stretch of the imagination. But for the first, you know, 10 to 15 seconds of this song, which was released this day in 1991, just go ahead and put your volume up to 11 right now. Don't think we don't see you right through that radio screen there, air drumming away like Dave Grohl or Greg Bach, as the case may be. Who wouldn't? Oh, well, I suppose a lot of people, but what red-blooded American man wouldn't air drum along to Smells Like Teen Spirit, again, released this day in 1991. You don't just have to be in the 80s and 90s for songs that you can identify from the very beginning. Here on this day in 1955 was peak chart position for a little Chuck Berry song. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? All right. I understand that the rock and roll era was extremely new back in 1955. And nevertheless, I was still a little bothered to find out that on this day in 1955, Maybelline reached its peak on the pop chart at number five. At number five. Now, it did hit number one on the R&B chart, but you have to remember in 1955, the pop charts were full of acts that were competing with Chuck Berry. Like, you know, Pat Boone, Mitch Miller, the McGuire Sisters, Tennessee Ernie Ford. And I'm looking at all these guys, going, and Chuck Berry couldn't get to number one? Well, no, not with that stable of talent on the charts. How are you going to break through on that? So Chuck Berry peaked at number five on this day in 1955. Sometimes it's not necessarily a song on the radio that you can figure out right away with the first couple of notes. It might be a TV theme, like a little show that debuted on NBC this day in 1990.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys who were up.
Do we get reminiscent now about Will Smith, like how young and funny he was once upon a time, or do we just go, yeah, he's still kind of a jerk for the Chris Rock slap at the Academy Awards?
I mean,
I have to admit, I'm still kind of in that latter camp, but
I mean, that's a whole other thing. I think that's a deeper discussion about his upbringing and his. There's a lot that's covered in his autobiography, but honestly, it's I still have beef in my heart for how he treated First and Viv. So,
oh yes, First and Viv. Yeah, that's a whole different story right there that we should explore someday. Okay, why have we played a couple of Beatles hits earlier in the hour? Because on this day in 1966, one of the Beatles' all time great albums, Revolver, hit number one. So here's one more track you might have heard from off of Revolver.
I look at all the lonely people. I look at all the lonely people.
Helena, it might just be me, but I think I like to think of other people who at some point you've listened to enough Beatles songs and enough rock and roll and everything, and you realize these guys had a big hit with a song with nothing but strings.
Yeah.
No guitars, no drums, nothing.
Also,
just strings.
I don't know if you've ever thought this, and I challenge the audience listening right now. Listen to this song again from start to finish and ask yourself this question. Does it feel like a song that's not finished? Doesn't it feel like there should be, like, more? And then it gives you three verses, two choruses, and it's over. It's 2 minutes. But you're like, this should have more.
I like that. I will give that some more thought. So Revolver was the number one album this day in 1966. The number one single this day in 1966 was by the Supremes.
Oh, yeah. I like missing
so many.
Oh, go on.
What's it? I was gonna say there've been so many remakes of this. You know, I think of Phil Collins and some others, and I don't know that I've heard a bad remake. This is just one that lends itself well to whoever is working on it.
Absolutely. I just like messing with people and saying, "Did you know that they remade this? This is a cover of Phil Collins," and just seeing people either go confused or watching their brains start to boil.
Actually, when you hear that bass line at the very beginning, it's kind of Jet? Are you gonna be my girl?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Kind of sounds like that at first. At first, you're like, wait, did I cue up the right thing? Yeah, you did. You're fine. And one more. Again, just a lot of really iconic song intros today. And everybody's familiar with this song as it was done by The Doors. But Jose Feliciano, born on this day in 1945. And all you ever hear from him nowadays is the old Christmas classic Feliz Navidad. But he hit the charts with a Doors a song that people know by The Doors, but I think it's wonderful in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Is this where Kristen Lyerly says we're getting too mellow again? Well, too bad.
Whatever.
Whatever. Let Jose sing. You know that it would be. And that'll take us out while we tell you that today is National TV Dinner Day. It's Beauty and Barber Week. It's Arts in Education Week as well. Hans Breitenmoser and more coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.